Well, what did you exactly do in the resistance process?
Well, I was, well, to make a short story about it, I left home without my father knowing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked a distance of about 64 kilometers.
Wow.
Uh-huh. On bare feet. I even left my shoes, so my parents and my brothers and sisters would not notice that I uh-huh. run away. Well, I walked that distance and until we reached the headquarters of the 85th headquarters at the Oksibu Area Command. There were four regiments, 85th, 86th, 87 and 88. Well, when arriving there, it was past midnight when I arrived at mountainous area, and it was so cold. Well, anyway, the officer there was assigned to inducting people. Asked me, "How old are you?" And I told him 16. Right away, he came back to me and said, "You're too young. You have to be at least 18." So, with a smile on my face, I told him, "Sir, tomorrow when you induct me, I'm going to be 18. So I was inducted the following morning, 18. But anyway, when I was there, I was assigned. He also asked me, "Where do you want to be assigned?" Without hesitation, I told him, "Of course, at the firing line." And he said, "Crazy, you're too young," and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally I got assigned to the signal platoon of the headquarters and headquarters company of the 85th Infantry Regiment of the Cebu Area Command. The commanding officer then was Lieutenant Colonel Rugasiano C. Espirito, the late. He was killed in Mindanao, not during the war, but against the Muslims in Mindanao.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was that we went through cold nights with very little food to eat, because it was not yet time for the Americans to land. And we recount that there were nights where we used to drink Luya in water, hot water.
Oh, yeah.
It's supposed to even improve your voice.
Mm-hmm.
But it was instead to keep us warm.
Mm-hmm.
And when we were at guard duty, right in front of the message center with the telephone and everything. So we drank that to keep us awake too.
Mm-hmm.
And then the time came when, a couple of months later, when the American forces landed in Cebu. I think must have been early January. So we had to move out. I remember very distinctly that even before they arrived, we already got a sprinkle of supplies, food and something else. And so we had to give an instance of how much we sort of endured when our platoon would have food. We would have one can of corned beef.
Mm-hmm.
They would put it in a empty kerosene cup, rather kerosene can, this big.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd pour water into it, and they'd pour the contents of one corned beef. And that's our soup and our meal with the rice. So that's how we used to eat.
How many of you were?
One platoon, maybe about 20 or over.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to make do with what we had.
Mm-hmm.
What we have. And we remember when we would be moving, you know, we would be told, "Okay, be ready, we're going to move out." So we had to pack up everything.
Mm-hmm.
And when we would resort to digging into the ground for root crops to eat, because we didn't have enough food.
Mm-hmm.
Until, of course, the Americans arrived. And that's what I remembered. And we were on our way from the mountain, went down from the mountain to the city, Ubud city itself. And that's when we first saw our fellow American brothers in arms. Well, I remember instances where we encountered our dangers, where when we were coming down, we were provided with smoke grenades, and a green grenade, or was it yellow, not a red one. You would throw it just to identify friendly, if we are friendly, because sometimes American planes would be coming over us. And there was a time when they saw some American planes approaching our area, and I don't know whether it was a sergeant or whatnot, he got nervous or whatnot, he threw the wrong grenade, smoke bomb, and I think he threw a red one, which is indicates anyway. And then when we saw that, we started scrambling away from the area, because the next thing would be a trapping. And there was a time when already in the outskirts of the city, we were already bivouacked in some of the Nipa houses, big Nipa houses there, where we had our signal station, our walkie-talkies, and our switchboard. When all of a sudden, American planes were flying over us, and they started strafing the area, our area. So everybody started scrambling for safety, and I did not move away from what we were. I was at, heck, if the bullet that's going to hit you is already has my name in it, then I'll be wounded. Anyway, I did go away from where I was sitting down until everything, was finished. And they looked at me, "You're crazy." Well, anyway.
You didn't get hurt?
No.
Oh.
And so, those are some of the, experiences. And, of course, during the guerrilla, before the actual landing, you would see some of the ropes and pretty big trees in the mountains where they used to hang collaborators around, and there were lots of those still hanging. That's a reminder. And when we were in the city already, that's when we got to see American soldiers, and I remember that the 85th Regiment was known as the fightingest regiment of the entire Cebu Area Command. As I said earlier, there were four, 85th, 86th, 87th, and 88th. Just as we were known to be the fightingest, 86th was referred to as the 80th Cebu. You know what the Cebu?
No.
Retreat.
Oh,
so they were very fond of retreating. 87 was, I can't recall, but the 88, they referred to them as the 80 kain or something. They were very fond of eating, but fighting, no. I don't want to be fun, but anyway, I'm just stating facts. So much so that when the mapping out operations were conducted, it was the 85th Regiment that was selected to go with artillery backup from the Americans to map out areas where the Japanese were still holding up. And this was in the Guadalupe Hills, where the Japanese dug tunnels, deep, so long and so deep tunnels. So much so that when we were bivouacked right in front of those tunnels, during the night, the Japanese would come down from the tunnels to get water from the streams. And of course, our infantry would just be waiting for them. And then shoot a flare, then pick them out, pick them out. And they were at the mercy of our own counterparts, soldiers, not Americans, Filipinos, the 85th regular. And this went on for a few days, a week after they noticed that there were no more Japanese soldiers coming down. So they were curious, how come? Are they dead? Or they've already found a solution where they could go without drinking water. So anyway, finally the decision was made. Go up to the hill, go into the tunnels.
Okay.
And to get the Japanese out of the tunnels. So the infantry went up the hill towards the mouth of the tunnel. I think there were two or three. And they were advancing upwards to the tunnels. But all of a sudden, when they were almost up at the mouth of the tunnels, they saw coming out of the tunnels. So before they actually went up the tunnels, there were a couple of Americans with flamethrowers, okay? And they went up and they were throwing, igniting the tunnels with flames. So they went up already, and they thought that there would be no more Japanese. All of a sudden, out of the mouth of the tunnels came a wave of hand grenades coming from the tunnels. The Japanese soldiers were still there. Maybe they retreated to the rear when the flames were coming in. But when the flames subsided, they decided to go to the mouth of the tunnels and throw hand grenades. So I could see, I had binoculars being in the signal platoon. We saw that the advancing forces turned their backs and started running down the hill. Mm-hmm. And some of them were actually toppling down, rolling down. Mm-hmm. And the two American flamethrowers, we saw them just do this, knapsacks. Mm-hmm. They threw out the thing and disposed of the tanks of gas on their backs, and then they also rolled down together with our soldiers. Mm-hmm. But to make the long story short, we finally went to the tunnels, and believe it or not, when they went inside, they saw and found out the reason why the Japanese didn't have to go to the stream and, you know, be slaughtered for getting water. They dug a well so many feet down until they hit water.
Wow.
Okay.
Wow.
And, well, as we move and the length of the tunnel, well, when they traced it, was several kilometers long, the tunnel. And when they went to the extreme, the exit of the tunnel, it sort of encompassed already about 4 or 5 municipalities. That's how long the tunnel was. So when you go down there and go out, it's about, if it were in the States, it would become, the entrance of the tunnel would be San Francisco. Maybe you'd go out in already, Richmond?
Wow.
That's quite a long tunnel.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.